So his name is Barry Peterson. And that story, his story, could be told multiple times over again by many of you sitting right here. Many of you have experienced God's saving grace. There was a time in your life when you understood that there's this separation between you and God. And what kept you separated from you and God was your sin, the mess that we make, the poor choices that we choose to make. But God in all his holiness had to keep himself holy, but he loved you and he loved me, that he wanted to separate that gap. He wanted to cover that gap. And that's exactly what he did with Jesus. Jesus left heaven, came to earth, and died on the cross so there wouldn't be the gap anymore because of our sin, so that we would not be separated from God. And many of you here this morning have put your faith in what Jesus did for us on the cross. That's saving grace. When you choose to believe what Jesus did on the cross to cover our sin, that separation, and now we're covered underneath Jesus and Jesus' forgiveness, and now we can enter into this relationship with God. Now, not everybody in this room this morning has experienced God's saving grace. And so maybe you are here this morning and you need to experience God's saving grace. I want you to know that this is a church that has prayed for you. The people, many of the people sitting here have prayed that you also could experience God's saving grace. But God's grace just wasn't meant to be our saving grace. You stop and think about grace. Grace is not just about our spiritual destiny. Grace is about our earthly journey. Grace just isn't about our spiritual destiny. Grace is about our spiritual journey here on earth. And we see that come up again, time and time again in the Bible, in the Scriptures. In fact, Peter, the Apostle Peter, notice what he says about this in 1 Peter 1:2. It says, "May God give you more and more grace and peace." He's asking God to give. Peter's writing to a group of people who have already experienced his saving grace. Now he's saying, I want them to experience more grace. You can't get more saved. Right? So it's not saving grace, but there is something about growing in his grace. And then Peter ends this letter with this. In 2 Peter 3:18, it's like this is like an imperative, and he's looking at, imagine Peter looking at you eyeball to eyeball, and he's saying, rather you must grow in the grace and the knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So it's more than just saving grace. It's about grace to live out our earthly journey. Grace not only changes our spiritual destiny, but grace changes our earthly journey. And our working definition, just to make sure that we're all on the same page here about what grace is, there's multiple ways to define grace. Here are just four of them. The first one is the theological definition of grace. For grace is free, undeserved favor from God. That's that saving grace. That's the grace that we didn't deserve. Rick Moore did not deserve grace. I didn't earn it. I didn't go to church enough. I didn't do enough good things to receive this. It was undeserved on my behalf. It's free and it's favor. It's this undeserved favor from God. Grace is also this virtue coming from God. It's a characteristic of who God is. He sets the standard for grace. He is grace, and all grace should be compared or measured against the kind of grace that God gives. And I love this one, a disposition to kindness and mercy. Grace is a disposition. It's a way at looking at life. It's a way at looking at other people. It's a way at looking through life circumstances. You have this natural bent. It's not natural, actually. It's supernatural. But it's a disposition to kindness and to mercy. And then this is another cool one. It's attractive. Grace is an attractive, polite manner. It's something that grace is attractive. Grace doesn't repel. Grace calls people in. And we saw this time and time again in Jesus' life. And unless, I know that sometimes this can make people nervous. And I could be making you nervous right now because you're like, oh, Rick, you know, all you care about is grace. No, there's always grace and truth. And grace and real biblical grace is never at the expense of truth. Never. And we saw, and we see that time and time again with Jesus. With Jesus, I remember the one time, remember when the Pharisees, the religious people, dragged this lady caught in the very act of adultery, and they bring her to Jesus, and they're like, Jesus, you know, here, we caught her. You know, what does the Bible tell us? What does the law tell us to do? And he knew what the law said, and they knew what the law said. And so, see, here, watch how grace responds. Grace responds not in some dogmatic way and in your face. Grace responded here. Jesus responded in grace. He responds with a question. Who among you is without sin can throw the first stone? Now, he knew the answer to that question, but he put it out there. See, he responded in grace. But then, when the woman came to him and Jesus is like, where's all your accusers? Jesus said, and she's like, well, they're gone. And Jesus said this. He responds in grace and truth. He responds with, hey, neither do I condemn you, but go and sin no more. See, that's grace and truth. And so, we never have biblical grace at the expense of truth. So, just to put some of you at ease there, all right? So, we're going to dive in to this idea today about grace. That grace changes everything. We're in this study in the book of Joshua. And as we journey through the book of Joshua, we're going to see all these different keys. These keys are going to be huge in the way that we're able to develop and deepen our relationship with God, because many of us bump into obstacles. We have roadblocks in life. There are just challenges. The challenges of life are difficult. But this key of grace, no matter where you are, no matter if you haven't even put your faith in Jesus yet, or if you have put your faith in Jesus, it doesn't matter where you are this morning, this key about grace that changes everything, has the potential to be like one of these defining moments in your life. Because if we could become more grace-filled so that we can give out more grace, that's life, defines who we are in our workplace. This idea that grace changes everything is all through Joshua chapter 2. That's where we're at. We're in Joshua chapter 2 this morning. Joshua chapter 2. So take your Bibles, go to Joshua chapter 2. If it's, you know, you got your hard copy, you've got it on your phone, however, bring up Joshua chapter 2. And we don't have time to read the whole story this morning, but we will see that grace is woven all through almost every verse in here. I just love this. This is such an exciting story. Joshua chapter 2, verse number 1. Here's what it says. This introduces us to our character, our three main characters this morning. Then Joshua secretly sent out 2 spies. First, you know, I didn't even tell you the context, so let's not forget the context, right? Joshua just took over. He's leading now. He took over from Moses. He's leading 1 million-plus people. And they are still on the wilderness side, but they're about ready to go conquer the promised land. But before they cross, they're on one side of the Jordan. They got to get across the Jordan River. And look what Joshua does. Joshua secretly sent out 2 spies from the Israelite camp that was at Kadesh Grove. And he instructed them. So here's what Joshua told them to do, these 2 spies. Scout out the land on the other side of the Jordan River, especially around Jericho. because they had heard about Jericho. They had heard about its fortified walls. They had heard about all that's happening on the inside of the city. They knew that this was going to be a big deal. So he wanted these guys to check it out and tell and let them know what they're up against. So the two men set out, came to the house of the prostitute named Rahab. That's inside Jericho. So they came to the house of the prostitute named Rahab, and they stayed there the night. So here's our three main characters. We've got the two spies, and we have this lady, Rahab. And let's just pause and think for a moment about the two spies. We're not given their names. We have no idea how old they are. We don't have anything other than these two spies. But let's just pretend. Let's pretend they're 50 years old, right? They're 50 years old, and Joshua sends them out to go, you know, spy out this land. And if they were 50, that means we know that they wandered around in the wilderness for 40 years, right? So that meant that when they left Egypt and Moses was leading them, they're around 10 years old. So can you imagine a 10-year-old boy? And he leaves this city that they were held captives. His parents were slaves. Their parents, these two spies, their parents are slaves. They're slave boys. And yet now they're finally released, and Moses is leading them. And they get all the way to the Red Sea. And as these little boys are there, they're like, "Where do we go now, Moses?" You know, and they look over there and they're like, there comes Pharaoh. Pharaoh's on their way, on his way to, you know, either recapture them, bring them back to captivity, or he's going to annihilate them. He's going to wipe them out. 10-year-old boys, think about this. And then all of a sudden, the Red Sea parts. And as 10-year-old boys, they get to walk across on dry ground with their families, with their community. And as 10-year-old boys, you know what they were doing. They were walking along and they're looking on either side of those walls, right? And they were sticking their hand in there and saying, "I got a fish," right? They were like, "Look at that. I never even know that was in the Red Sea. I'm not swimming in the Red Sea anymore." You know, they were just, when they walked across, they got to the other side. Think about when that came down on Pharaoh's army and wiped them out. Think about how that would permanently just give you God's grace. These guys experienced God's grace as boys. As boys in the wilderness, they were starving. You know, mom and dad didn't have enough food. And they were like, "What are we going to do for food?" And then all of a sudden, God sends from heaven food. It rains down. God's grace. They are so thirsty. "Mom, we want something to drink. There's no Coke in the refrigerator. What do we need something?" And they're like, "Well, we heard if you go out to the rock that some water is going to come out. Take the family bucket down there, the water bucket, you know." And can you imagine these 10-year-old boys holding the bucket at the rock and water's pouring out? And they're like, "Yes, God, God's grace." That will be forever, you know, cemented in their minds, in their memories. I remember being in fourth grade, probably 10. And this is another one of my tractor stories. If you didn't hear my last tractor story, this is another one of those tractor stories. Hey, and we already took the vote, so it's too late. You can't cancel it out, right? So there's this tractor. You know, I love this tractor. And so one time, my mom had some family friends over, and she's babysitting. And so there's this little girl. She maybe was in kindergarten, but she wanted to go on the tractor with me. I'm like, "Sure. I'm in fourth grade. I know all about OSHA rules, right?" I said, "Come on up on the tractor, you know." And so she's up on the tractor, and we're clearing ground. There's 13 acres behind our land and behind our house, and Dad would just clear a little bit at a time. And I got the job that I would be able to go pull out the stumps. You know, that's, you know, when you cut down a tree, it usually leaves up a stump. Dad would leave enough of the stump up so we could wrap this ginormous chain. It weighed 10 times more than me, but man, just so I could drive the tractor, I found a way to drag the chain, wrap it around the stump, and then pull the stumps out. So she's on the tractor with me. She's doing that, right? She's like, you know, that's what you do out in the country. You know, you pull stumps. And we're pulling, we get this one big stump, and it would not come. And I'm like, finally, man, I just kicked the throttle all the way up, and I just jammed it. And we pulled so hard, it jerked that tractor, and she fell forward when that chain caught. And she fell right on the ground. I'll never forget this. She has blonde hair, and she had blue eyes, and she fell right at the tractor tire. Her head was laying right at the tractor tire. And she's looking up at me with these eyes, and I'm looking down at her with these eyes, thinking, I just about killed you. You know, I just about crushed her head. I just about ran right over her. And whenever I think about God's grace, that image comes into my mind every time. That's God's grace. God's grace saved me from having a horrific accident as a little boy. And I could tell you one time after another time, and you guys would be like, where are your parents at, you know? Well, you know. God's grace. This is what God's grace does. And think about this. Now they have experienced God's grace for 40 years, and now they are ready. They want the rest of their community. Some of their community now has been born in the wilderness, and they don't want them to miss out on God's grace. God's grace empowers you to take risks. These spies took a risk. They knew that their life was at risk when they left the camp and they had to go secretly. Like, this is like an espionage deal. They are over there crossing, and now they're in Jericho. And you know what? Verses 2 through 7 in our Bible, it tells us the story of what happens there. In verse 2, it tells us that they were found out. People saw them going to Rahab's house. And so the king, and the word gets back to the king. The king sends, you know, two of his special secret agents over there, pounding at the door, you know, show us the spies. And she like hides them. It tells us in the passage, it says she hides them in the roof, you know. And so she hides them in the roof. And then they're like, you know, let us in, let us in. They let him in. And she's like, yeah, they were here. But they went down another, you know, they snuck out just in time, just before the city gate, you know, closed. And you know what? If you go that way, you can probably hurry and you could catch them. And so off they went. And now she comes back into the house. And as she comes back into the house, let's look at the conversation that she has with these spies. Before the spies went to sleep that night, Rahab went up onto the roof to talk to them. And here's her conversation. This is like we get to listen in to this private conversation. And Rahab says this. She says, I know the Lord has given you this land. She told them, we are all afraid of you. This is key. We are all afraid of you. She's speaking on behalf of the whole city of Jericho, that we are all afraid of you. Let that sit there for a second. Everyone in the land is living in terror. For we have heard how the Lord made a dry path through the Red Sea when you left Egypt. That was 40 years ago. And they and the people in the city still talk about God's saving grace for them. How God spared them. They're talking about that. That's still etched in their memory. And we know what you did to Sihon and Og, the two Amorite kings east of the Jordan River, whose people you completely destroyed. And we look at you and we see their army and we're like, there's no way you could do that. How in the world could you do that? And then notice what Rahab says, speaking on behalf of their community. No wonder our hearts have melted into fear. No one has the courage to fight after hearing such things. For the Lord your God is the supreme God of the heavens above and the earth below. Notice what she acknowledges. This lady Rahab who wasn't living a very honorable life, given that the title that the Bible gives her, experienced grace. Now let's stop and think about this. Let's stop and think about how Rahab experienced grace, but what about everybody else? How come only Rahab heard the same stories that everybody else in the community heard? But everybody else decided to harden their heart against God's grace. They decided to live in fear of God's grace instead of turning their heart over to God's grace. See, that's the difference. You say, well, how do you know Rahab did that? Did you notice what she did here? She acknowledged that who God is. She acknowledged that God is the supreme God above all the heavens and all the earth. They were worshiping all kinds of pagan gods inside the city of Jericho. And here's this lady acknowledging who God, who the true God is. That your God, that the God of Israel is higher than any God that I worship here. We know that Rahab, the prostitute, experienced grace, saving grace. We know that because, and James, the brother of Jesus, said this about her. It said, Rahab, the prostitute, is another example that she was shown to be right with God. She was shown to be right with God by her actions. You see, grace leads us. Grace always leads us to action. It leads us to live out our faith. And here, and her action was that she hid those messengers, those spies, and she sent them safely away down a different road. Can we notice this about grace? Grace empowers you to take risks that you normally wouldn't take. Not only did the spies, not only did they risk their life, Rahab was risking her life. She was risking her life against where she grew up. She was risking her life against everything that she had been taught as a little girl living in Jericho. She was risking her life against the gods, the idols that she had put in her life to turn her back on that. She was turning her back on her king. There's treason going on here. She risked it all because that's what grace does. Grace will empower you to take risk and have conversations with people that you normally wouldn't have. Grace will empower you and allow you to take have conversations with people that you normally wouldn't associate with. Because that's what grace does. Because grace isn't about looking right and looking good and making sure that grace isn't about that. Grace was always grace was always meant to be received, but then to flow back out of your life. Grace was meant to flow. It just wasn't about receiving. It's about flowing. How is grace doing in your life? Is grace flowing out of your life? Does grace flow out of your conversations? Does grace flow out of your posture? Are you more worried about being right and making sure that everybody else knows that they're wrong? Or do you just let grace flow? Do you let God call them? Do you let God work on their heart? Do you ask grace-filled questions? Watch your posture with grace, because grace empowers you to take risks that you normally wouldn't take. And as we continue the conversation, notice how the conversation continues to go. She says in verse 12, she says, now then, she's looking at these spies, will you please swear to me by the Lord? Notice she knows there's power in the Lord. Will you swear to me by the Lord, as I have dealt kindly with you, you also will deal kindly with my father's house and give me a sure sign. Let's think for a moment about these two words, kindly. Hesed is the Hebrew word for kind, for the way that they translated this word into kindly. actually, the Hebrew scholars tell us this is a very hard word to actually translate, because they said it's the love of God, the mercy of God, the grace of God, all rolled into one. And if you looked at it in the Hebrew, it would say hesed. And the Bible translators decided to translate it kindly. But it's like the love of God, the love of God's mercy, God's grace, kindness, all rolled into one. And notice what she's worried about, because this is what grace does. Grace empowers you. Grace allows you to take risks, but it empowers you to go to people, to care about other people, that it's not just about you. She's worried. She says that you would save alive my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all who belong to them. They could have been married. They could have had, this could have meant, who knows how many people this could have meant. But she's concerned, because that's what grace does. When you look at other people, when you see them, you're like, I wonder if they've experienced grace. I wonder if God could use me to be the one to help introduce them into God's saving grace. And the men said to her, our life for yours, even to death. Notice the explanation point. Our life, it sounds like a Braveheart moment. Our life for yours, even to death. If you do not tell this business of ours, then when the Lord gives us the land, we will deal kindly, hesed, and faithfully with you. Grace frees us to reach out to people no matter how it may look. Great, that's what grace does. You're not worried about what if somebody sees you with them. One time I was picking up my oldest from the Boys and Girls Club. She worked there. No, she didn't live there. She lived with me, but she worked at the Boys and Girls Club. And I was picking her up, and we were pulling out, and you could tell this guy had just missed the city bus. He had just missed it, and he was like all upset. So I'm like, hey, this is an opportunity. So I pull up, say, hey, did you just miss your bus? Yeah. Hey, well, jump in. I'll help you. We'll take you down there. My daughter's eyes are like, boom! What are you doing? Like, she's like, what are you doing, Dad? I'm like, get in the back. He gets in the back. She is like, we catch up, we pass the bus, of course, because that's easy to do. But we pass the bus, and we let him out at a bus stop where he can catch the bus and continue on to where he's going, right? But when he gets out, Ashley, she's like, what are you doing, Dad? You just picked up a stranger. What if he killed me? I was like, grace empowers you to take risks. Grace empowers you to reach out to people no matter how it looks. Because that's what grace does. I really think it does that. And then what happens? What happens after they have this conversation? They work out this deal. These spies agree to that. They escape and they say, you know what? Anybody that you have inside your house, when we come to wipe out this city, you and whoever is inside your house will be saved, and put this scarlet cord around your window so we'll know. And that's God's grace. That's just a symbol of God's grace. So the spies make it back. The short story is the spies make it back. And here's what they report to Joshua. The spies tell Joshua, truly the Lord has given all the land into our hands, and also all the inhabitants of the land melt away because of us. Notice what they do here. They immediately, because this is what grace always does, grace always shines the light back on God. It always shines a light. It's not about us. It's not because you have the power to do it. It's not because, you were good enough. No, it has nothing to do with you. It has all to do with what God is doing. So, grace changes everything. It changes our perspective. It should change our perspective on life. Man, if maybe you're here and you've experienced God's saving grace, and that happened to you 25, 30 years ago, and you're just kind of crusty. that you're just not very happy. People at your workplace know you as like, ooh, don't go by her. Don't go over to him. They're a little bit grouchy. If you are a Christ follower, man, grace should change the way that you look at everything. And as a result of that, people will look at you differently. Grace empowers us, grace frees us, and grace always shines the light on God. Here's our next steps. Pray for me. I need to put my faith in Jesus Christ as my Savior. I need God's saving grace. Is that where you're at this morning? Maybe you are here this morning and you have not yet experienced God's saving grace. You don't even have to leave here before you can experience God's saving grace. In fact, at the end of this service, we're going to have prayer ministers right up here in the front. And they would be very happy to sit down with you, to pray with you, and to help you understand if you need more understanding about God's saving grace. And you can just, at the end of this service, when everybody's going that way, you come this way, and you pray with one of these prayer ministers that will be here in the front. Maybe this is where you find yourself at. Pray for me. I need to experience God's grace in a fresh way so that I can live a life of grace. You know, some of you know that you just don't have a very good perspective on life. Some of you know that you feel like you always have to win the argument. Some of you know that you're just not very approachable. And I wonder if it's because you're not living out of a life of grace, and maybe you need to experience God's grace in a fresh way. And then I'm asking all of us to do this. And will all of you take out your connection cards? Because will you really consider between now and Good Friday to commit to daily asking God to show one person that you can show grace to? Man, what if you prayed that every day, and every day God's bringing somebody right to your desk, right to your office, right to the checkout lane, to your door, your neighborhood door. You know, you're at home with the kids and everything's going crazy, and somebody rings the doorbell, right? And it's like, oh, I can't handle one more thing. Oh, what if that was God's opportunity for you to show grace to that person who's at the door? You say, well, they just want to sell me something. Well, tell them about God's grace and they won't want to be there very long, right? And then, that last part, invite them. Maybe you could invite them to one of our Easter services. Grace changes everything. And I think this is the biggest key in all of the study of the book of Joshua, that if all of us as Christ followers would grab a hold of this thing, we could change our state.